Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It wants again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2710. That's 2710. Tonight we're going to have on a wonderful guest who has quite a bio. He has quite a story to tell. And we are all here with him. And before I go any further, I want to give out the telephone number. We have three guests here, but I'd like to have a little bit more. Panel, I should say. And the number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And then, you know, this is quite a story. And we're here to what we do here at NASCA. What we do is we support one another. And the people we have coming on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, which, of course, tonight is Friday, they tell their story. And not all the stories are the same, but they all have trauma, okay? There's trauma involved. And we all know about that on, you know, at NASCA. We all went through our own trauma. So he's going to be here tonight, but first I'm going to, his name is Lang Martinez. He's from... Martinez from Oxnard, California. Never heard of Oxnard before. But anyway, I'm going to read the mission statement. And I want to remind everyone, please, to keep their speakers off, because even if you drop a pin, you can hear it, okay? No lie. And so anyway, all right, let me read the mission statement, and we'll get started with the show. I'll introduce the panel. In fact, they can introduce themselves as I come to their name. And then we'll start out with Lang, okay? Now, this is the mission statement. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and it does. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, those are all very important, prevention, intervention, and recovery. I happen to work more with prevention because I'm hoping that if people become more educated and they watch over their families better, and I'm talking about the normie families, okay, the normal families, they can work with their children and maybe help them along the way as to what's appropriate, what's not appropriate behavior, you know, from adults and even older teens, okay? There's a whole story right there. So what I'm going to do now is introduce our guest. His name is Lang Martinez. He is from Oxnard, California, who was violently and sexually abused as a teenager in Los Angeles. And he was often seduced with cocaine and forced to perform sexual acts while underage. Now, I'm not going to read any more than that because this is his night. And this is his story, okay? Now, we have on the panel, we have Pamela, and she's from Louisiana. She's also ambassador, and she's also on the board, just as I am. And I'm glad she's here. We also have John, and John Anderson, and I'm very glad that he is here. He's new to NASCA for me, but he's a darn good guy to have on board. Yes, he is. And then we have Bill from California. He's here also. Okay. And, of course, he is the big guy. He's the boss. So he's president, and I'm vice president. So we have a panel here, okay? And this is very good. And now, Lang, I want you to take a nice deep breath, and I want you to relax and start out by telling your story in a chronological way so that people can follow. Okay, like my first abuse was when I was 3. I'm just using that number, whatever, and go from there. Okay, okay.
Yeah. First.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah. First of all,
the floor is yours.
Yeah. First
go
of
ahead.
All. Yeah. My name is Lang Martinez. Actually, I'm from Los Angeles, and I'm residing in Ventura, California. And I'm an advocate, basically, and I concentrate in Oxnard, California. Before I go any further, I wanted to on July 25th, 2018. I was dying in my disease of addiction and being spiritually bankrupt. And I cried out to God, and I said, God, I said, if you save my life, I'll give it all back to you. And my sobriety date is July 25th, 2018. So when we talk about July 25th, 2018, I was in prison, and I'm going to go back to what you said. I never knew when my mother passed away, and there's a lady who's very special in my life, and she's always been there for me, plays a very big part of my life. Her name's Bonnie, and she asked me one day, she said, Lang, what's your mom's name? Have you ever read her obituary? And I said, no. She found it on Google, and she said, Lang, you know, somebody was with her daughter, and she said, Lang, why don't you go outside and why don't you read it? I went outside, and I read the date, and my mom died on July 25th, 2010, and I didn't know that. My
wow.
Date, my sobriety date is July 25th. So in regards to my mother, going back into childhood, my mother was, and this goes into my life, into my story. My mother was 15 and a half when she got pregnant with me, and my father was 18 years old, and basically, my mother was taking care of my great-grandmother and had her mother, and my father actually picked up my mother. My mother was walking down the street, and my father pulled up and basically said to my mother, would you like some candy, little girl? And that's kind of like a story we'll get into later when we go through the panel. That falls into my life. So my mother got involved with this gentleman. My mom was pregnant with me at 15 and a half, and at 16 and a half, my mother decided that she didn't want to be a part of that man's life. And my family is connected to a newspaper called La Opinion, which is a Hispanic publication here in L.A. and Los Angeles. And my mother chose to walk away from that family and their money. And all she wanted was her son, Lang. And my mom used to sing songs to me. So at that time, when my mom was pregnant with me, and she had me 7 months. I was already 7 months pregnant with my mom. I was already 7 months in my mother's stomach. My grandmother passed away. And my mom took care of, when I was born, my mother took care of me and my great-grandmother. And my mom, they lived in an apartment. My mom decided that she was going to do whatever she had to do. And she became a waitress. She was a waitress, and she worked 2 jobs to make sure that she could take care of me. But see, by doing that, my mom wanted to make sure that I had a father figure in my life, and that's where things turned. So she met a man who I do recognize as my father. And so when I was approximately 2 years old, she married into a family of wolves. Not my father. Let's just go with my real father. Is a sperm donor, so let's call my dad. My stepdad is my dad. His name is Gary Huff. That is my dad and my father. But my mom married into a family of wolves, and they were white. And I never knew I was Mexican until I was 11. And the family that I grew up, I was always different. I never knew. If that I didn't belong to my dad. I never knew that I wasn't really a Hup, but they knew that I was Mexican, and you know they were white, and I took a lot of abuse. Plus, they were alcoholics. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know what that's like.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So growing up in that kind of. Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, you go. Go ahead. This is your night. Go ahead.
So growing up in that kind of situation, and you know, them being alcoholics and stuff like that, and you know, and being babysat by my grandfather, which was my dad's father, and stuff like that, and them being alcoholics. And back then, you know, it was Coors beer. You know, Grandpa used to assault me and beat me when I was being babysat. You know, he put hands on me, and you know, my cousin Rodney was there, and my other cousins, but I was the one that always took the beating, you know, and my, you know, my mom would always say something, but my dad would never, you know, would never really step into it. And you know, we talked about that later in the years, and that's fine. We'll get to that. But growing up in that family, of alcoholics, you know, there was always fighting, and there was always abuse and racism. So, you know, as life went on, you know, I told the story before is, you know, I had an Uncle Skip that was very abusive, and he wasn't very kind to black people. And I remember one time I was home on 94th Street, and that was the first home that my father owned. And my father did take care of me, and I had a stepsister and a brother, and we were taking care of my great-grandmother. And I remember one time, and, you know, I grew up on a basically, you know, they called it Ascot Park. So, you know, we'd go to the track, and he raced cars and had a body shop called Skip's Auto Body. And I remember one day he came to the house, and he was driving a chopper motorcycle, and he came home, and he fell off the motorcycle. He was drunk, and he handed my dad a pistol, and he said, "Gary, I killed them. I got three of them. What did you do, Skip?" And he said that he shot three black people, and he used the N-word. And he told my dad to get rid of the gun, and that was a location back then. You know, growing up in that area, that was Englewood and Hawthorne, and they had bars up there on Hawthorne Boulevard. And I grew up with that. So as time goes on, I had an Aunt Sandy who was blonde haired and blue eyes, and she was very pretty. You know, I had a crush on her, and my cousin Rodney was my favorite. And I was 11 years old, And when I was 11 years old, I was over there at their house, and you know, we had the slot car tracks, and you know, we had, you know, it was Tyco then, and you know, we were doing, and Aunt Sandy was drinking that day, and the mailman just got done dropping off mail, and Aunt Sandy made a comment that my cousin Rodney's father was the mailman, and I didn't understand, and Aunt Sandy at that time broke the news to me that Gary wasn't my father, that her brother wasn't my dad, and that I, my name was Martinez, and that my father's name was Horace, and that I was Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
And things kind of went from there. I mean, they were already messed up. They kind of went from there. So having the mother that I had, you know, and what I was going through, things kind of hit the fan. I got in the car, and I was upset, and I went back to the home on 94th Street, and my dad was in the room, and we spoke, and, you know, he told me the truth, but he told me, he told me I was his son, you know, I was his son. You know, I wasn't old enough then to say, you know, if I am your son, you know, why are you letting these things happen to me? You know, he never put his hands on my mother. He never put his hands on my brother or sister. You know, he did the best he could as far as taking care of the family. But, you know, it was his family, it was his family. And, you know, it was the Hups, and it was a tribe, you know. And that's just the way it was. So that's what I grew
well, Let me stop you here for a second here. Okay.
Sure.
Now what we're talking about here, okay, is a lot of volatile domestic violence and all kinds of things going on. I come from a family of alcoholics. I'm an alcoholic. And I saw all this same stuff that you went through, a lot of it. And I, too, found out, but many years later, that my family wasn't my family. I didn't know that. I just knew that I was different, too. See, I'm already relating to you. So when people are telling their stories so often, like I said, you know, our stories are never quite the same, but there's a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. And this is why what we do is we support each other. And a lot of times there's a lot of mixed emotions as you're telling your story. Let me ask you before you go any further, because there's a little part of your life that you haven't, you know, quite gotten into. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's important to we, the survivors. You went to school, correct?
Yeah, I went to school. I went to school. So that was also an issue and a conflict in my mind too, because being a Martinez, even though being a Huff, the Martinezes were a very wealthy family. Even though my mom took a minimum of child support back then, it was $150. The Martinezes didn't want to adopt me, give me a better life, and mom wasn't going to let go of me. So I had, you know, I had the clothes, you know, the OPs, and I went to a parochial school. So, you know, Gary, my father, was a machinist, didn't make that kind of money. I did go to parochial schools. I started off in kindergarten at a place called, I can't remember the name of it, but I went to a kindergarten, I went to a Lutheran school, and then from the Lutheran school, I went to another school, and I went to Good Shepherd Lutheran School, and I went to parochial schools up until the sixth grade while I watched my brother and sister not have those same privileges. Yeah.
Was that like a faith Lutheran in the beginning?
What's that?
It was like a faith Lutheran in the beginning?
Yeah, it was Good Shepherd Lutheran. Yeah, I went to parochial schools, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right, so I was in the parochial school.
That's a lot of moving around. That's a lot of schools for one kid to have to go through already, though. John, listen to all the schools
you just mentioned. I went to a Lutheran school for kindergarten, and then first grade up until sixth grade, I went to another parochial school, and I stayed in that school up until then, until I went to a private school, right? So what I was saying is my siblings weren't blessed. They didn't go to private schools. I did. And that's because of the outside money coming in that I didn't understand and I never knew about.
Okay,
does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Right.
It does.
Okay.
Because you see, a lot of times when we go to school, we can't even concentrate. You know, we come from so much anguish and anxiety and so forth at home. So were you able to have friends? Were you able – what kind of kid were you? I mean, were you able to, like, mix in with the others or what?
Well, no. I mean, the problem with – you know, growing up as a Huff and later finding out being a Martinez, the Martinezes are kind of blessed with male breast. You know, I was fat. I was a fat kid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was teased about being fat, and you know, I had man boobs, kid boobs. So I wasn't one of those kids that in the summertime or go to the pool, you know, wasn't able to, like, take off the shirt kind of kid, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
That was definitely something, you know, not feeling not belonging there as well. So, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, you know, as a Huff, and then, you know, going out with the Huffs and, you know, going to the lake or going to parties and over to a pool or something like that, you know, I was a bowl in a china shop, that kind of stuff, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
they had no problem calling me fat, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or step away from the cake,
Sure,
I went through all that kind of
that
abuse.
That kind of stuff hurts, yes.
Absolutely.
You see, that's emotional, that shows emotional abuse. See, we cover the physical, the sexual, the emotional, the neglect, all those abuses, all of them. And so what you're showing here, and then I will go to the panel after you tell a little more of your story. You're showing here is that you saw a lot of domestic violence going on. There was problems in the family. your brothers and sisters or whomever, you know, they couldn't go to school like you could go to school. And mm-hmm. and in school, you were being bullied. I was bullied until I started punching back.
Sure.
I made them scared of me.
Yeah.
I mean, the teachers were scared of me, too. But see, that's a rough existence. See, that's already you're building. You're showing all the abuses that you had to go through as a child, and it's not easy
sure.
being a kid anyway. You know. Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't you pick up off of you're in school. You're not allowed to have friends over. Probably you don't really have any friends, and you're being made fun at home, and all these things that you were just talking about. When did you start, okay, with the cocaine dealing and perform sexual acts? At what age was that?
That was around 17 years old. So I Bill knows a little bit about, you know, hi, Bill. Bill's on the line, right?
Yeah, he is, but I have his mic
yeah,
is
I'm
closed,
here.
but he is there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So in regards to that, let's do it. So my story is this, a little bit about that, I'll get into that, is I'm also the author of articles which are called Nobody Knows But Me. One of my articles is part of my series is called The Truth Nobody Knows About Me, and that's an article that I wrote that was republished, and that's about my sexual abuse and my rape. In that article, there's a part in the article where I had a conversation with the perpetrator, and I said, do you remember when my mom put that gun to your head? And the gentleman said to me, your mom was crazy, and I said, no, my mom loved me. So I'm going to leave it at that, so now let's go back to that. So when I was 17 years old, I was in high school, so now I'm in private schools. I mean, I'm in public schools. I'm going to I'm in a high school. I'm racing BMX. I've lost some weight now in school. And so I'm in a public school. So I was fat in school, and at that time I was smoking marijuana. I was taking Black Beauties, wanted to lose some weight. I was working for a bike shop. And there were some friends of mine that told me about this place that where they were working, and you know, Lane, we can all work there, and you know, we could have fun, and we can party. So I ended up quitting my job, and I ended up going to this place, and by going to this place, the gentleman was involved in cocaine. So how the story goes in regards to that is the gentleman that, so I have to be very careful. I'm caught up in some legal stuff, but we're going to go ahead and go here. So, my stories or articles that I write or stuff that's written about me or what we're doing right now is I go back to a place where you're talking about, when it talks about the homes of the Hollywood and the elite, is back in July of 1981 in California, there was it was worse than the Manson murders. It was called Wonderland, and there was a movie called Wonderland. There was a book called mm-hmm. Malice in Wonderland, and that they were unsolved murders. And the person that was suspect, there was two, was John Holmes, which was in the porno business, and there was Eddie Nash. Eddie Nash owned a club called The Odyssey, so we can go there. So when I was 17 years old, I was at The Odyssey. So being at that Odyssey, the papers and the tabloids talk about a club of people of all ages, and it says where you found your identity, and that's untrue. So in that club, my perpetrator, I was groomed and I was taught the business of cocaine. And teaching the business of cocaine is how, at that time, you had the good cocaine, and I was taught basically how to work it. And so that was Eddie Nash's club. So the gentleman, my perpetrator, was getting it from Eddie. And then what's happened is, because I was a minor, I was selling it inside the club. the Odyssey itself. And as I said, the tabloids newspapers talk about a place of children of all ages. That club was open till 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was a place where children went. But, see, besides that, adults went there, and at 2 o'clock, you know, the bar closed, and that was at the right side. I was there. So back then when I was there, the story that hasn't told of what we're working on right now with I do have quite a few people in my corner. I know we're not there, and they're listening right now. You know, I have Mark Alvarado, Rich Cisnero, Adam Vega, and everybody's on the, they're all listening now. I love all of you guys, and thank you. And it's like the song by Phil Collins. I can hear, I can feel it calling in the air tonight. Oh, Lauren, I've been waiting for this moment for all my life.
I want to go to the panel. Hold on a second, Lang, because remember, we have a panel. And they're listening to your story. So I had to get you started back, you know, from so people could you know, envision you as to what kind of a home you came from and how school was. And we've gone through that. That's great. And now we do know that the sexual abuse and also pushing of the drugs started when you were approximately 17 years old. And you were in and out of these clubs and this is all very, very, very abusive. We know that you also, too, you know, you were amongst domestic violence. And that in itself, I just want to make this clear before I go to the panel, okay? The domestic violence itself that you saw and like I saw and maybe John saw, I'm not sure yet, but I know what I saw, the knives flying and people, blood all over the place, all this stuff. Okay, that in itself, the trauma of that is enough to traumatize and cause PTSD with any child. Now, what you went through was even much more severe. And so I'm trying to get a little bit of order here so that the people who are listening can follow. Okay? So let me get the panel on. And where we're at right now is you in the bars, and you were being sexually abused, you were being groomed, and you're pushing the drugs and all that other stuff. Okay, I want to go to Pamela, and she's at the top of the list here. Pamela, would you like to ask him a question or make a comment?
Yeah. Lang, I'm so happy you came on, and you're doing a great job. Somebody's doggies are talking. Okay.
I know.
So you're doing it. You're very brave, and you're doing a great job. I knew you would. My question is, you kind of jumped from when you were in school, parochial school. What happened that led you from the age of 15 to 16 to get into the club at 17? What happened during that period, 15 and 16? Did you have any predators grooming you at that time?
Well, when I was in high school, and that time I did have, I had a best friend, Kurt Bodecker, and going to the school that I went to, I can't say, but it was in the beach area. And being in the beach area, in the school that I went to, you know, they had what they call surf class, and the kids at that time, you know, they would sneak up and go down to the beach and stuff like that. So during that time, I was aware of Black Beauties. So at that time in school, I started taking Black Beauties. I was playing baseball. I raced BMX. I was working at a bike shop, and you know, I lost the weight. But even though losing the weight, though, I still had boobs. That's a Martinez. It's a Martinez thing. You know what I mean? I'm heavy chested. I still am today.
Okay.
I laugh at it. Yeah.
How did you go from, you know, just partying on the beach to going into the club? Who led you into the club, and who started grooming you? Was it a friend?
Well, like I said, I was already 17 years old, and you know, I'm already, you know, stuff's already happening in my life. Wasn't doing very good in high school. You know, I was good at baseball. I was racing bicycles. I was failing in school. So like I said, you know, some people told me about this place that I could work at, you know, and instead of being at the bike shop, I chose to quit that job and go to work for this gentleman that was part of the Hollywood scene, who was doing this. So by working for this gentleman, he was already grooming me, mm-hmm. right?
So was he a pedophile?
Was he what?
Was he a pedophile and had a pedophile ring or something?
The gentleman that I'm talking about, I'm involved in a legal situation. So yeah, the gentleman that we're talking about, I can't get into specifics, but yes, I was
okay.
sexually abused,
okay.
and I was raped.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. I understand.
Let's leave it at that.
Thank you.
Because this is
right.
Yeah. Because if there's legal
right,
things
can,
here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I can.
Well, I'm trying
to
get across to you. Here, Lang, hold on a second. I'm getting across
sure.
to you. And this is for your safety, okay? If
yeah.
there's legal things that maybe you don't want to, you know, address on air, that's fine. Because the bio that I have in front of me is so long and so filled that I can just go to that bio and grab anything out, and we can keep the legal
sure.
parts. Now we know that there's some legal, which is okay and it's good. I'm hoping that, you know, you do well with that. So we'll leave it at that. Let's go to John Anderson here and see if he has any questions. Go ahead, John.
Right. Hey, Lang, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. You can hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Man, you know, I'm looking back at everything that you started out with your life, man, going back to, you know, everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, with Sandy and then your Uncle Skip. I mean, you've been around some interesting people, haven't you, for a long time, huh?
Yeah.
You know, and then you had, you know, definitely had, you know, access to a lot of stuff early in your life, just like we did, I think, you know. And,
sure.
You know, and the thing about it is that, you know, with you trying to get into to racing BMXs, you know, that's pretty awesome,
I raced BMX,
Yeah, but I can imagine being on those Black Beauties while you're doing it, though, you know.
I remember it was flying through the air, it was called Riders Ready Pedals Ready. Okay, so you remember that Riders Ready Pedals Ready.
We got to be close to the same age. How old are you?
I just turned 58 on the 20th.
All right, you're just a couple years older than me. So cool. I figured that, you know, by the way things were going with you, man. Tell me more, you know, about this Hollywood thing. You know, I'm just so curious about, you know, did you run into any major stars or that you can't name, but you'd say you did, or, you know?
Yeah, you know,
I mean,
being
around that atmosphere, you know?
Yeah, one of the things I'd like to say, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and go there. Just give me a second, as Ms. Eckridge and Bill. Yeah, I love you both. You guys take my calls. Whoever's listening to the show, the people that are listening to me and the people that are on the two people on this panel have been there for me. And I do have a big village in regards to people that helped me with my recovery. And ASCA has been and the people on this panel have been a big part of it. And I thank you both for being here.
Okay, dude.
You know
that's
what? It's
okay.
Just take a deep breath, Lang. It'll be all right.
Yeah.
Hey, we all been there, man.
Right.
Bro.
Right.
You know.
So when we talk about it, and I'm glad that you asked that, you know, there was a thing about a year ago, and I work with Courageous Healers. I work with a guy by the name of Randy Boyd, and you know, we're at a place where we no longer want to be the victim. You know, we want to be the victor, and. You know, I work with him. I work with a lot of people. I have a very big village. You know, I just got done writing an article called Turn the Page, and it says, you know, God's angels that didn't let me fall. And I have a lot of angels that believe in me and believe in my story. You know, I just got them talking about a song by Phil Collins. You know, I've been waiting for this moment all my life. You know,
yeah,
in regards to
tonight.
The, yeah, that's me. So, you know, oh, Lord, and I've been waiting for this moment all my life. And when you talk about that club, the story that hasn't been told is I felt very bad last year for Corey Feldman. You know, Corey Feldman and the way that that came down and his management team, the way that they handled that was that was wrong. I believe Corey. I do believe Corey. I've spoken to Corey. The way that was handled by management, I think it was done on purposely. I think that was the devil. The way that we're handling something is going to be a lot different with my team. So I'm going
to
tell you
good
something.
For you.
I've been waiting 40 years. There are some people that have talked to me and saying, Lang, are you prepared for this? And do you know what you're doing? No. Does God know what he's doing? Because, see, it's happening today.
Exactly.
So, right. I was at the Odyssey, and what I saw at the Odyssey was when I was there, besides my perpetrator, we're not going to get into that, and I work with somebody, so we have confirmation. There was a gentleman that was in there working with somebody, and what they would do is they were grooming the young boys out there, and security was leading them to the who's who. So the confirmation that I have is that the security at that time, back in 1980, 1981, was Los Angeles Police Department. And yes, I have the authority to say that. I work with somebody that's confirmed that. I have talked to Homicide in regards to that to confirm that LAPD was the security for Eddie Nash at that time. Do I know? Did I see? Can I confirm who that was? No. But the security was there at that time. So what was happening in that club is they were taking young boys there because, see, it was a club of all ages. And when I talk about something that I've waited for all my life, this is what I've been waiting for. See, when I had somebody that was working on a book for me, her name was Catherine Townsend Lyon, and you have investigators, and somebody said something to her, it was 40 years ago, honey, and chances are they're all dead. And then Catherine said to them, not all of them. And you know what? We're not all dead. And there's not, you know, it's not all about Lang and just Lang, because, see, there was thousands of us that went through that place that I saw. You know, I was there. You know, I was there and I saw what they did. You know, so yeah, they were led to the stars. They were escorted outside. You have to remember that was a club. That was one of the only clubs in Hollywood. That was one of the only clubs in Hollywood that Eddie Nash had that there wasn't a lot of attention on him when it came to investigations, busted, underage, dealing, stuff like that. It was out of the limelight. He had other clubs that were going at it. Eddie Nash was known as the kingpin and the gangster at that time.
Oh,
what was going on?
I know the name. Definitely know the name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you saw it with your own two eyes, too. Yeah. So what happened is there was a gentleman there, and I got confirmation, and I'll say it. And we have confirmation. There's a gentleman by the name of Chris Brenner, and he's not going to like it. Chris Brenner is a gentleman who's a manager for a lady that's on that does Resident Evil, and we were involved in a conversation with them, and he didn't know about it. He knows about the conversation, and he confirmed he was going to do a miniseries on the Odyssey, and we came at him and said, no, you're not going to do something that's not true. You know, how can anybody there, how can you talk about a place that's open all hours and talk about children finding their identity? Are you serious? Are you serious? I mean, what have we come to as a people to write about something when you got children mixed with adults and you're talking about people, about children finding their identity? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Man, that's just unbelievable. It really is. I mean, that's just some crazy stuff right there. I can only imagine, you know, what it's like to even be around that atmosphere, having that type of pressure. You know, just everything. I mean, what's the hours involved? I mean, you had to be rolling until 5-6 in the morning, huh? You know, especially getting into cocaine and everything else too. I mean,
what's
that's
that?
The things that happen, and you know, with all of that. You know, I mean, 2-3-4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, you just getting going, you know. So
what happened is night owl clock. Well, yeah, back then you have to remember is you know, you had the Peruvian plague. So in a club situation, you know, you could double that up. You could take 28, put 28, make 56. It's going for $100 a gram. And then you had, and then at that time, you also had what they call, you had the Roar 714s with the Quaaludes. And then at that time, you know, you had the Roars. And then on top of that, back then, because you had the other type of people in there, you had what they call poppers. You had the amyl nitrate. So, you know, it was a party place. So back then when you had the Troubadour and the other clubs and the bars close at 2 o'clock and you got this place that's jumping, you know, with the dance floor and people coming in, Sex Pistols and stuff like that, you know, after 2 o'clock, well, you got children there. You have adults coming in there as well.
Okay, let's stop here.
Okay.
Whoa, John.
Well, thank you, man. Look,
I'm
really happy for your story to come out tonight. And listen, I'm always going to be here. Listen, I'm a rocker, man, you know. And I understand where you're coming with your music. You know, if you ever pull up my site, I got one that's on there. It's John Anderson Acoustics. And all I do is play songs for my era. You know, I'm a classic rock guy. I got like 30 guitars, and I do it just – for, you know, people that are survivors, man, you know, just like you and I, you know. So I hope to get to know you a little better. Okay, Bubba? Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That's good. See, what you're describing, all right, is like big, you know, to you and maybe to a lot of other people. I'm a lot quieter than you are, believe it or not. But I've done a lot of the same things that you did, okay, because I used to do the lewds. I was heavy into lewds at one time. And then other people around me were heavy into the heroin, okay? They did that.
Yeah.
And I drank, too. And we had our own parties, and we used to have the street gang fights and go down to the Neck of Newark, which is bad around here, Neck of Newark. And they'd get their drugs from there. And I'd just stand back and watch because I was lightweight compared to them. And but they had their clubs, too. And we'd go over in Patterson areas and other places like that where I didn't belong. So you see, we do this. This is we putting ourselves many times in risky, you know, positions, okay? Risky positions. And it's because we don't have the nurturing that we need as a child growing up. And this is what we talk about on NASCA. Is so that we can bring it all together, because we don't have the type of home, because a lot of it is all environmental, you know, what we need. And then we get out on the streets and we're our own person. We make a lot of mistakes. Now, this was never your fault. You know that, don't you?
Right, yeah.
You do know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that feel a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of this, a lot of that. Yes. We have to take some responsibility for some of the things that we did. But when you're 17 years old, and I can remember, I can put myself right in your shoes, and you're watching street fights, and you're watching people cop and all this other stuff down, and chain fights. They had chain fights, especially if the stuff was bad, all right? So there's a certain element of excitement to it and acceptance, and you're a part of, because so many times we don't have a home, because I've been homeless too, and on the street. So what we have is what we have in front of us, and a lot of times it is, of course, the drugs and the clubs and the people, and some of them are connected, some of them aren't connected. Okay, there's all different kinds of elements of people that get into that, and that's what we know because that's where we're at, okay?
Well,
now, what I want to do, I want to bring on Bill, because there's something you want to discuss with him. Then I'll go down to Roberta. I see she's here also, okay?
Yeah.
So, Bill, go ahead. There's something you want to ask or add to what Lang is talking about. Go ahead.
Well, like Lang, I have some experience that, you know, from the era he's talking about. I mean, I came here in 1980. It was a little after that, but I know the club he's talking about. I know the situation he's talking about. I've been intimately involved with LAPD for a long time. So I just want to say that, you know, I get it. What he's gone through is a big deal. And, you know, people didn't want to hear it, and they still don't. So I know he's being careful, and I'm glad he is. But He and I have spoken a bunch of times, many times. you know, I'm really glad we have this forum for him, you know, to get him on the air. He's doing great in his recovery, too, by the way.
That's good. That's good.
Yep.
And I'm happy he's here, too, because, you see, there's some of us, not all of us, but there are some of us, a part of NASCA, that walked the same streets and walked in the same shoes, you know, a lot on the rough side with the biking, the clubbing, the pill popping, the shooting up of heroin, the snorting of the coke, and, you know, being pimped out and not having a home. Or if you go home, no one even cares that you're there. That's where the wallpaper comes in. We're in the house, but we don't belong. And that's what you're talking about when you were saying when you were a kid, you know, you didn't belong and you knew you were different because they treated you differently, okay? And that's where problems start. And we end up out on the street sooner or later doing something. And because we're so vulnerable, to those people out there who want to get a hold of children, whether they're 12, 13, 15, 18, each category has a different age. The pedophiles are actually for kids that are prepubescent. That's before, you know, they're like 13. Okay, that's 13 and under is prepubescent. And then you go into another category. The people that you were hanging out with were more interested in the teenagers, and that's why you ended up in the clubs. And I'm very sorry that you had to go through all the sexual abuse and the grooming and then the sexual abuse, all of which they go together, and that you went through. But you know what?
Right.
This makes you a very good advocate today because, you see, you've walked in the streets and been on the streets and been into the drug scene, been into the clubbing and all that other stuff. And that's, you know, there's people out there just like you. And myself, too. I have to put myself in that category. I don't like to, but I have to because that's where I did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I was, okay? That's where I was.
Right.
So, but you're going to turn out fine, okay? This is the good news.
Sure.
You're on your healing journey. I want to ask you something. Did you ever get any kind of help at all?
Well, have I got any what?
Help.
Help I what?
You know, like from a psychologist or, you know, whomever.
Well, yeah. You got to remember, see, I've been very fortunate that on July 25th when I cried out to God and I said, I'll give it all back to you, when I went into a program in L.A. when I came back to Ventura County, before I called out to God and I went to a program and came back, it made quite a big noise out here in Ventura County and Oxnard especially. And they would say, how come you, Lang? Why are you, Lang? How come you're different? February 5th, 2019, I spoke in front of council, and I answered those questions, why I was different. And I explained to them what I did and what, you know, and how I did it. And I'm just a guy named Lang. May 9th, I sat on a panel called Humanizing the Homelessness, and what I did choose is I chose to be in the media. So I've been very fortunate that I'm not the first individual by no means to come out of my situation in Ventura County, but I am the first individual as far as making a noise, as far as advocate and making change in Ventura County. So my first article was Nobody Knows But Me, Homeless on the Streets of Oxnard. I think that was May 24th. And then I got involved in other stuff, officials and stuff like that. So it's been about 2 years. I think there's 28 articles. I write in recovery magazines and I speak in regards to issues of homelessness and I speak in regards to issues of sexual abuse and rape. So, you know, as far as the
That's
stigma
good.
On who I am and the persona. So as far as the help goes, yeah, I have a full team. So Bill and I talked about that in the program. So having 5 years sober three times, and they talk about in the program about 5 years, 5%, 95%. Right. Yeah, I have my first and foremost is my Lord and Savior. Right. I'm definitely involved in therapy. I have I have therapists. I have counselors. I have a psychiatrist. I have a village. So I've been very fortunate because of my articles. I have people that surround me. I have people that don't have their hand out. I'm very fortunate with different kinds of things going on in my life. So I have a group of people that are with me that management stuff that don't have their hand out. Their first priority is that when I start believing that I'm okay and I no longer have to work on myself, they're gone. So, I'm involved in something every day to try to help myself in regards to my journey, in regards to my healing. I've been very fortunate that in my advocacy, my articles, or what I do is I'm a little bit different than most that are already at a spot where they wrote that book and hi, I'm here, right? My thing is coming up on 3 years on the 25th on this journey that I've been on. I've dealt with some brick walls and I've gone through them, so I'm able to share that with those that are in the same place I'm or just getting on and starting their journey to where I'm able to share and talk about what I do or and stuff like that, that just too, that you can get through it to as well. So I do a lot of stuff.
That's good.
I give it
That's
back.
Good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the things that I told Bill and I'm very honest about is does Lang still have I forgiven myself? No. I have a wonderful life today. I have many opportunities. There's not a day or not a week that goes by I'm not offered a lot. You know, I made a promise to God, if you give me my life, I'll give it all back to you. And that means that means everything that has to do with my articles, my whatever offers that I have with books or scripts, and I have a lot of stuff that's going on when it. You know, my story's called Nobody Knows But Me, God Did, but that'll be in God's time and when things are ready and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But all those things will go back to what God did for me, and I will give that to help others. So, you know, today I own my own business and stuff like that. I own a credit repair business. So I try to do a lot in the community. I try to do a lot in helping others. So I think I do a lot of that stuff. Bill and I talked about it. I do a lot of that to get away from Lang, I think. I mean, I'm honest. My stuff's transparent. I'm honest about that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
You say get away from Lang. All right. What is it that you're running from? What is it you're trying to get away from?
You know, I really don't take Lang. Time. You know, I get, you know, my therapist and the people, I really haven't really spent time, you know, with myself, just being with Lang or liking myself and really, that's something I need to do because, you know, a lot of the stuff I do sometimes is destructive. I mean, they've written a lot of stuff about me. Bill knows about it. They've written about me saying that my advocacy is unorthodox. You know, Lang, you got to watch your temper. I'm in a relationship that I cause problems. I do a lot of things that I shouldn't do because I don't take time for myself and really do what I need to do. So I'm trying and busy to do stuff for others to like pay a penance or something. You know, I'm a work in progress. Does that make sense?
That's all right. That's okay. Now that you see what you're saying, that this all goes
Absolutely.
In line. It all goes in line with child abuse because we do have trouble with relationships. And when you're saying that you're trying to figure, you know, you don't want to get too close. You said you there's a lot of things you need to forgive yourself for. A lot of times people will throw themselves, into trying to help other people, and that's a good thing. Don't get me wrong. But it's because they are running from themselves because they don't like themselves yet, okay? But you're on the path of learning to like yourself. And you know what? The more that you do for people, the more that you help people, yes, it makes you feel better about yourself. It helps you with that low self-esteem, because we all have low self-esteem who have been horribly abused. All these things that you speak about are coming from the past. So that's why you have the perfectionists. You have the perfectionists. They'll do perfectionists at their job. If they have a job, they'll do perfectionists. They'll be there. And then you have the people pleasers. You have those that don't, because we had no direction as a child as to what's right, what's wrong. This is why we've made mistakes. And this is what you're referring to.
See, what I do is, like, right now I'm involved in some training as far as speaking. There's a lot of stuff going on in my life. So one of the things that I want to be honest about, because I know they're listening, is I have a beautiful person. There was a nurse that knew me at my worst, and I was involved in a relationship with her that comes with a beautiful little daughter. And what's happened is I ended up messing up that relationship at this time, and I have. And I want to go back to something, because I want people to hear this, and I want, you know, people to listen to me to understand that. I did this. So I was with Randy Boyd, and I was doing some stuff with Randy Boyd, Greatest Healers, and I was doing some stuff out in Palm Springs, you know, where it's a hub for sex trafficking. There was a lady out there, her name was Patricia, and Patricia works with sex trafficking with children. And she says to Randy, says, "Randy, you know what I prayed for today?" And Randy says, "What did you pray for, Kim?" And he goes, "I prayed for one of these children or these girls to have a normal relationship, get married, and have children of their own." And I thought about that. So the stuff that I've been going through, I had some stuff that hit the fan. I was doing some advocacy on in regards to homeless people, you know, that was a lot of stuff I do in Ventura. And stuff hit the fan with me, and I hit a low. And I called Randy. And I said, "Randy, I said, you know, I said, my situation with Bonnie, I said, it's bad." And I said, "Does this fall true for me?" And he said, "Yes, it does." So I said, "Yeah, it does, Randy." I go, I've lost her. Well, what happened is things went through, and we ended up getting back together. And what's happened is I've ended up messing it up again, and I've ended up messing again. So I'm in a spot right now, and I love her more than anything, and she has a gift of somebody that's been in my life, and I put that situation back into another compromising situation again because of my actions. You know what I mean? Because that's part of what you have to do, though,
is you say that it's your fault these two times, is to sit down and have an honest conversation with yourself as to what you did, what you think you did in the relationship, so that you can change it, so you don't do it again for step number three, if it comes to that. And this is all very common with people who, like us, you know, who have had no real training didn't see a real mother and father in a very good, marriage. We don't have any role models. So therefore, we go out and you have an anger issue. You have anger issues. And your anger
that's
you. And you have it against those people that, you know, were bothering you when you were 17 years old, who were grooming you, and also the kids in school, and the people in your family who are calling you fat, and then yourself, because you're thinking to yourself, why can't I do better? Why can't I be better? Why do I have to be like this? And these are the things that are floating through your head, okay? But while you're doing all of that, you are able to write the articles. And it does say here, let's see, that his wealth of knowledge comes from his lived experience through imprisonments, hospital stays, and mental health services. And it says, unfortunately, the sexual abuse and allegations made by his perpetrator severely wounded his brilliant mind. You do have a brilliant mind. You have a racy mind. Okay, that's what you have, a racy mind, you know. And that's, a lot of us have that. Believe it or not, that's why I'm up till 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I can be the night owl when the phone calls come in, because I have a racy mind too, okay?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And And I don't forgive those people, by the way. The church saved me from myself, and the church saved me so that I could, I had a good Catholic church, believe it or not, that did a battery of tests on me. They did all kinds of stuff for me and got me on the road of recovery as to where I am today. And I'm very thankful to that church. That was St. James in Red Bank, New Jersey. And I do talk about them at times. So I understand the God issue. I understand, you know, giving a lot of your problems. First of all, don't blame yourself for anything that you did unless you're doing something right now, like in the relationship.
Right.
Think about what you're doing.
Yeah. Right.
You know, sit
right.
down and think about what you're doing and what can I do to stop that. That's that's just advice from someone who had two failed marriages.
Right.
Most of it was them. Thank God they'll even admit it. But I'm sure I had something to do with it too. Okay.
Right.
I want to get down to Roberta. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's part of, you know, this is part of the things that, you know, I talk about and part of my story and my advocacy. But you know what, these things that we have to work through because, you know, my life and the things I've been through and stuff like that. And the chances of me having that relationship with her they're not very good. Is it possible? Absolutely. It's like you know, courageous healers. You know, like Randy. You know, no longer being a victim, being a victor. You know, Patricia talking about praying for that one child. So at this time, absolutely. So. You know, now it's time, you know, I did talk to Bill about that. And after this, you know, there's some stuff going on. I did an interview the other day with a friend of mine, Adam Vega, and we're working on some things. And after doing this, we're going to take some time out and I have to reflect and start taking a look at Lang and really work towards, I don't want to be that one person that's left alone, you know. I really don't.
I understand that. You already feel alone. Okay. See, that's another thing that we go through is we have that terrible feeling of being different, of being dirty, of maybe shame, and being alone. Yeah. These are things that we all go through. And it's from our past. It's from our past. But as time goes by on the healing journey, and if you have the right people who are working with you, okay, they'll be able to help you see that you're not alone. And you said that you have a good support system, and that's very good that you have that support system because a lot of people don't have that support system, and a lot of times they don't heal or they won't heal as much if they did have that support system. I want to go to Roberta here because she hasn't had a chance to even say hello to you. Oh, my God. She's
welcome.
From Oklahoma. Okay, Roberta, say hello to Lang, please.
Hello, Lang. My name's Roberta. I'm in Oklahoma City.
Hi, Roberta. It's a pleasure, man.
Hello. Yeah, I can relate to a lot of your story because whenever I was about 17 or 18 is when I started getting off into the bar and club business. And and it's pretty wild and crazy for quite a few years from I guess about 1981 or 82 to about 1988, I guess, or close to there, you know. I mean, it was just sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know. I couldn't believe that I was pedophile and groomed in my early childhood, and I don't have all my story because I have memory blocks, but, you know, vaguely remember, you know, I can remember things, you know, like people taking me to bars and clubs, but, you know, when big people, you know, it's like big people, you know, you're with big people, so you just go there with them, you know, because they take you there, you know, and I just wanted to ask, was there, like, any kind of sex or drug abuse in your early childhood?
No, there was no sexual abuse, no.
Or drug abuse or anything in your early childhood?
In my childhood? Yeah, well, yeah, I smoked marijuana. you know, at the age of 15.
But I mean, I'm
and
talking about
16.
Like, yeah. Well, I'm talking about like prescription drugs or people giving you drugs before, you know, before you even knew what marijuana was, maybe, you know.
No, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, I just wondered about that. But, I'm really grateful that I got to listen to your story. I'm grateful that you survived. And one day I'll know my whole story and I'll share it. But I'm just glad that I know enough of my story to know that I'm a survivor. And, you know, it's hard for me to realize sometimes I am a survivor. Because when you're talking about, like, gang and cult or clan things and, you know, you're talking about horrible, horrible, terrible, deep, 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 deep secrets, you're scared, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's where that aloneness comes from, too, that he talks about. Because when you're alone, you're alone. When you're out on the street, I mean, you were like on Skid Row and all that other stuff. I see this in the bio, you know, when you're homeless. That's a very, very frightening place to be. And thank you for that, Roberta. I appreciate that. Because, you see, that was good. But you see, what happens is, too, when you're out on the street, I work with homeless today when I can. Because right now they have them in hotels and everything else in New York City, and that's where I was born in New York. So I have that kinship with a lot of those people, you know, and my heart goes to them. But, you know, when you're out on the street like that, you're so alone and you're frightened and you're afraid that, you know, people are going to take what you have. And that's why people don't go. I just want to get this out there because people always ask me this. Why don't they mostly go to shelters? Well, they do. A lot of them go to shelters, but they have to worry about their stuff. You know, how many times do you see them with shopping cart and, you know, the carriages? And that's what they have their stuff in, you know, are the carriages, right? And you get into the shelters, and a lot of times there's a lot of trouble. So that way they decide instead to stay out on the street because they don't want to go through what they might go through in the shelter.
Right.
And so I just want to get that out there because people do ask me that question, and that's the reason for it. There's a lot of trouble in the shelters too. So tell me, all right, so you've had quite a life, okay? And what is it you're looking forward to? I mean, it says here you had a life of crime, addiction, and homelessness, and it leaves you an undesirable found on Skid Row in Los Angeles. That's where you were. Nonetheless, Lang is purposely and quickly trying to reinvent himself so he can help others who are victims of child sexual abuse. I believe that you can do this. I believe you do this. You can do this. You're very hypervigilant, okay? Very hypervigilant. It's just like a jumpy, jerky, you know, like if someone gets too close to you, or you go into a restaurant, you look for exit signs, whatever, because there's that hypervigilance because we're always on guard. You spoke earlier about the brick wall. You ran into brick walls. And whether that be into the legal system or whether it be through yourself just trying to live, you think you're doing well, and then there's a brick wall that comes up. A lot of it is because relationships, you don't know how to start relationships, you don't want relationships, you want relationships, but you don't know what to do with relationships, and you run into the brick wall, you see. And what you're going to learn as you get even further on in your healing journey is that day is going to come when you take down a brick at a time, a brick at a time, a brick at a time. And you make yourself a vulnerable, okay, in a good way, a positive way, okay, to other people. And by doing the work that you're doing, who better to do the type of work than we, the survivors, okay?
Sure, yeah.
Because we know what it's like to be lonely. We know what it's like to be cold and hungry, many of us, not all of us. We know what it's like to not have the nurturing that we had should have had as a child. We know these things. We know what it's like to feel so filled with sadness and anger. Sometimes we try to commit suicide. I started doing that at 17. I wanted to. I don't know what that noise is, but please stop. Somebody's moving around. What do I hear? Okay, that's better. You know, let me ask you something. Did you ever consider committing suicide? Because so many of us do that. I'm just curious.
Well, I think through my drug addiction and my prison stays, I spent quite a few years trying to kill myself. And when it came down to it, I didn't want to die. You know, I get interviewed a lot, and I always get asked the question about that day, July 25th, because I was able to write an article that anybody in my condition would have welcomed death. And see, I suffer from ego. There's ego and there's egoism, and I do have a big one, and I'm honest about it. You know, you got to, there's been a lot of attention on me, and, you know, I like attention, and I'll be honest about it, and I'm working on that one too. Some people ask me if the door's big enough for you to get through, Lang. But no, when I was in the condition that I was in, I was foaming in the mouth. I had seizures. You know, I had a lot going on with me. And when I called out to God, I said, God, will you save my life? I'll give it all back to you. I was at a point in time I was about to die, but my head was telling me that I knew I'd go to heaven because I really wasn't that bad of a guy. And I figured that if I died like that in that kind of situation down there in L.A., down there on Vernon and Western, I figured if I died like that, the people down here, you guys would talk bad about me, and I wouldn't be able to talk shit to you about you talking shit about me because I like to talk. So I figured, I said, God, let's cut a deal. And I said, please save my life, and I'll give it all back to you. So when people ask me, that was the truth of it. So in the beginning, when I was doing the articles and I was speaking, and people would say to me, Lang, did you make a deal with God? I go, yes, I did. I'm a salesman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I cut a deal with him. Well, you know what? God made the deal with me, and he's been waiting his whole life to do so. You know, God made the deal with me. When I said, God, will you save my life? I'll give it all back to you. You know, God made the deal with me. I didn't make any deal with God. And what I do is what God's already chosen for me. You know, I was broken. Basically, you know, I did pick up my mat. And, you know, some talk about me being a freak of nature. You know, at 55 where I'm at today, you know, how many are still alive? I don't like that term, a freak of nature. You know,
no.
You know, and then, you know,
I don't
in one
like
of my
either.
Articles. Yeah, you know, and then, you know, in one of my articles, I think it was number three, you know, it's, you know, I wanted people to relate to me. So it was number three. And that's the title of the book that's to come. It's Nobody Knows But Me, God Did. And it was like a clown I put on the show. The pain is real and nobody knows. And I'm dying inside and nobody knows but me. You know, that's been
me feel
my whole
like
life.
Do you feel like that now, that you're still dying inside? Or is it
no,
your ambition
no,
to help?
No.
No, I didn't think
no,
so.
No, very, yeah. Where I'm at right now is, Randy and I talk about it, the people that are with me. You know, there was a meeting with my group about 2 weeks ago or something, and somebody mentioned the comment that about Lang healing, and then somebody mentioned the fact about, you know, about me being ready because there's some stuff that's about to happen, but I'm going to take some time out. And, you know, and somebody said maybe Lang will never heal, you know. I'm nowhere near that. Some people say that in regards to what I do or what I'm involved in, they say that they call me the moral response, you know, when it went into homelessness or my advocation in regards to, you know, somebody that's in pain and needs help, that I'm the moral response to homelessness. Somebody wrote something like that about me. I no longer feel about that. The stuff we talked about just now about the Odyssey, you know, the lady was talking about, my memories are repressed, but in regards to the story and what's going on, there was some objections about bringing this up now. And somebody said, for Lang, we need to put a halt on it because it's pretty big. And I said, no. I said, you know, it's been 40 years. And I said, you know, what God talked about, what's been in the darkness shall be brought to the light. So in regards
Good
to
man.
My perpetrator, I'm at a healing point. Where I'm at right now, though, in regards to when they talk about Lang healing, I'm in pain, for what took place 40 years ago because see, I'm going to tell you one story that I want you to hear. Back in the days back there in Hollywood, after hours, the rich people would get their money together and they'd get their money together and they had these mansions and you'd get put in the limos and Rolls Royces and they'd blindfold you and you'd go up in the hills and I would go up there and they you'd go to these and the gates would open, you'd be blindfolded, you didn't know where you were at and you know, they had the roulette tables and stuff like that, you know, you had the coke there and stuff like that and people had their money and stuff like that and I was there because of what I did, and I'll just tell you one story. So where I'm at today is this, as far as when you talk about moral response and the healing part, my stuff's okay, but it's not. So I remember the story, and I said, hey, can I use the bathroom? And they said, yeah, leave the bathroom, just go out the door to the left. Well, I didn't grow up with no mansion, so you go out the door to the left, and you look to the left, and you're looking at like a, you know, as a kid, you're looking at a football field, and it's pretty long. And people in mansions don't leave their doors open, you know. So what door to the left do you look at? Mm-hmm. So you open the door to the bush, to the left, and some old guy.
Take a deep breath.
Some old guy is hurting some kid. And one of the freaking doors to the left. You see, what happened with Corey Feldman, I feel very bad. I believe him. And the truth is that there's only one, there's, and the story is this, is there's only one, there's, and what I talk about is this, is they're monsters. They're not the wolf pack. And they're cowards, and they hide in the dark in the shadows, but they're three-headed monsters. And back there in that day when they groomed us, they were called freaking chicken hawks.
That's right.
And what they did.
I remember that terminology.
Back, mm-hmm. And back what they did back then, I need to mm-hmm. tell that story because I know because it's still happening today. And I feel very bad. I know what Corey did for Child USA because he's blessed me. But what happened with him with telling the truth to two Corys and what they let take place with the media and all that, yeah, he was surrounded by the devil because I feel very bad for Corey because Corey wasn't taking care of himself. I believe Corey. You can't tell somebody else's story. I believe Corey, what took place at the Soda Pop Club in 86, and I believe he was surrounded by people that didn't want the truth told. But I was there at a bad place at a bad time. And those people were monsters, you know. I was at a place to go back when they to end this because I see the time's running out. When my father said to my mother, "Do you want some candy, little girl?" I was a very good looking, you know, boy at that time. You know, I lost the weight. I'm on cocaine. You know, I'm 17. Mm-hmm. So I used to sell quantities in the gay clubs that were connected, like the Motherlode and Studio 12, and I would walk in these clubs because I even had bodyguards, and they would whistle at me, and they would call me eye candy, and there's no joy like a young butt boy, and you know, I'd go to the bar, and I'd drop off the package, and, you know, I'd be drinking beer, and, you know, back then it was dollar beers, and I'd go use the restroom, and you go into and these bars, they don't have urinals, they got stalls, maybe one urinal, and you go into the stall, and you got a grown-ass man going into the next stall, and they got holes in the dividers, and they're called glory holes, and you got some sick, perverted piece of crap sitting there trying to have a conversation with a youngster, and there's no other word for them. They're monsters. They're freaking monsters.
That's what I call them.
These individuals, what they're doing today, and what they did 40 years ago, it needs to be brought to light because, see, That club and what Chris Brenner want to talk about, you know, a place of no, you cannot find. What the hell were you doing letting your kid out all night, going to a club at 5 o'clock in the morning, hanging around with a bunch of idiots? Are you serious?
Right.
Right. Back then in 1980, you know, this was something that we weren't looking at. But that's a place when they were doing and they were doing what they were doing, and it was major back then. And I was there and I saw it, and it wasn't a good thing. You know, when I talked to Chris Brenner about it, you know, and because it was, you know, gay club, it was mixed club and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I even defend, you know, he talked about having sex with people 10 years his age, and he was 16. And he said, Lang, isn't the age 8? It's 16. I said, no, it's not. You know, when you got kids there, whether you're gay or not, and hanging around there, getting into the club to try to find a sugar daddy. Now we go with sugar daddy for the night because they're not belonging. There's other issues at home. Right? You're gay or homosexual, right? And a man takes advantage of it, you're a minor, right? Those children too, whether or not they're identifying as a homosexual or not, right? I had them as friends, right? That man still raped them. That man still took advantage of them, and that man was still a monster. They had no right to do what they did to none of us. And the gentleman, what he did to me, and he had no right to do it, and it still exists today. And no, I can't let it go. No, ma'am.
That's right. I understand that. Okay. Because you see, my theory on it, and this is my own personal theory, is they know that exactly what they're doing is wrong, and they don't care. Okay. So what I did, what I chose to do, and I've said this before on air, and I'll say it again, is I gave it to God, because, you see, it's too big for me. I was assaulted so many times that, hey, you hear about those kids that are go to jail, and they're like 10, 12 years old because they murdered someone. And I was afraid I was going to turn into that, okay? I wanted to twist this one's head. I wanted to stab that one. I wanted to do this to that one, all the stuff, all the stuff that happens, you know. And because the pain was too great. It was too big. It was too ugly. And they are monsters. And to this very same day, I use that same word. They're monsters. Whether I'm writing on Facebook or whether I'm speaking on the air, I always call them monsters because that's what they are to us. They're monsters.
Right, right.
So I give it to God. I give it to God. Like,
yeah.
Okay, I give it to God. Let him handle it, okay? And what happened to you, what happened to me, what happened to John, what happened to Bill, and what happened to Roberta, what happened to all of us, Pamela, all of us, you know, it wasn't our fault. And we don't.
No.
It's our choice. We don't have to forgive them. Can we forgive ourselves and maybe some of the risky businesses we put ourselves in? Yeah, okay. But look where it came from. If we come from a home that was functional and where we had the proper training and all the things that we need, the nurturing that we needed, chances are, that we wouldn't have been out in the streets. I wouldn't have been in New York City by Club 54. Bill probably knows about Club 54. All the things that I did, all the things that you did, it doesn't matter. Yes, it was 40 years ago in your case, you're saying 40 years ago, but we still have the memories. So what do we do with these memories? It's what we do with the memories that help us to grow or not.
Right.
Those people were screwed up. They're screwed up, okay? They were monsters.
Right.
They're screwed up. And now you have the opportunity, as a person who's on their healing journey, all right, to help others who need help.
Right.
And that's where our healing comes from, too. Yeah.
Right. But one of the things that I want to talk about that you know, when you mentioned the part about, you know, not having to forgive is that, you know, I met Randy Boyd through Keys to Recovery, and, you know, in regards to addiction and stuff like that, in regards to me, you know, my sobriety date is coming up for 3 years. On July 25th, I'll have 3 years. By the grace of God, go I.
Yes.
Thank God.
Congratulations.
You know, Randy, thank you. You know, Randy wrote a book, you know, called, the Wounded Child Within, I think is the name of it.
Yes.
And Randy, Randy Boyd's at a point to where he's at forgiveness. So I work with courageous healers. And I've had so much hate and so much stuff in my life, and my problem's been forgiveness. So if it's possible for a gentleman by the name of Randy Boyd, and I know his story. I'm just pointing him out because he's a mentor of mine as well. If he's at a point to where he was able to forgive the individual, his perpetrator, his stepfather, and I know his story and I've listened to him, I want to work towards to where I can be where he's at with forgiveness, to where I can be at. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and you will. You will.
Right.
You know, we only
right.
have a few minutes
so,
left. I just want to
right.
warn you ahead of time. We have like maybe
right.
3 minutes according to my clock here. So,
okay.
All right, listen here. You did a wonderful job tonight, and you've
right.
educated a lot of people. That's what we do here on NASCA. And I want people out there to go to our website, you know,
sure.
that's NAASCA.org, that's NASCA.org. And we do have, people on, we have books and stuff that you can look at. And Loving the Wounded Child Within was by actually Robert Burney, okay. And
well,
I read that book. It was very good. Yeah, that's okay.
I can't forget. I might say the wrong name of it. Yeah, Randy wrote a book, The Wound Something. Yeah, you can look at his site.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, Randy Boy. He wrote he wrote a book. Yeah, his book is pretty well known, The Child Within or something. I apologize, Randy. Yeah, he's on the air. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all
right. Right.
But anyway, the point is this. You're well on your, listen here, you're well on your healing journey. And you're going to continue on your healing journey. Continue with your therapy
Randy
also. You need that. You need your therapy, and it helps to keep your head straight and maybe help you speak, into your own mind and into your own heart and forgive that wounded child within and to love that wounded child within. Remember, it was never, ever, ever your fault, okay? Ever. Now, when would you leave? We have 1 minute left here, according to this. My clock might be a little bit off. But what would you say? What would you leave with people? What would you, for hope, for the sake of hope, for people who have had, horrible lives and very, very trying lives, what would you say to a person who needs help?
Right. What I'd like to say real quick, can I do something real quick and I'll answer that?
Sure, absolutely.
Right. I want to say thank you to La Crescenta Weekly Newspaper for interviewing me yesterday and giving me an opportunity to make amends for the things that I did back in 2011. Thank you, Mary O'Keefe, and thank you, Adam, for being with me. And thank you, Michael Alvarado, for always having support. And thank you, Bill, for supporting me on that interview with that lady. Thank you very much. The one thing I'd like to say is Mission Church has a statement. It says hope for everyone. Hope for everyone means that through God, anything's possible. The first thing that I tell people is this, is that I use the analogy, I'm kind of, they say, unorthodox. So in regards to men, is I don't care how many times that you might have sat on Uncle Johnny's lap. You're not accountable. You're not responsible. It's not your fault. You play no part. So, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you go to the fourth column and it says you, what part did you play? You didn't play no part. And you know what? It's okay. And there's hope. And the only way to heal is to be transparent and talk about it. Let somebody know. Find a professional, no matter who it is, and start on the journey by admitting it, talking about it. But first of all, let yourself know it's not your fault. That's what I do. It's not my fault. It's not your fault. That's it. The bottom line, it's not your fault. I don't care how many times it happened, right, how many times you got talked into it, right, you were a child. You couldn't have stopped from happening. Now, how many times you sat on his lap or whatever the analogy may be, it's not your fault. You were only a child. He was a grown-ass adult, and he did it, not you. That's all I have to say.
And that's a mouthful, okay? And that's the truth. It was never, ever, ever our fault. The shame and the blame many times is put in the wrong place. Okay, so I have to end. I have to end this show. I want to thank you so much for coming on. You have a wonderful story to share with people, and you have a lot of hope to offer. And just keep doing what you're doing because you're well on your way.
Keep doing it, man.
Okay. Okay. Just keep it up, man. Okay, because we all need you. All right.
Look me up, Lang.
Okay.
How do I look you up?
So,
Yeah, tell the other. Yeah, hit me up on Facebook. I'd like to talk to you. Okay.
All right, though.
Okay.
Okay.
Here
and if
we
you
go.
Get a chance, if you get a chance, read the articles. Nobody knows but me. God did. Thank you.
Oh, I like that. Yes, I like that. Okay. Thank you so much. And everyone out there, this was another terrific show. You know, it was a wonderful show. He had a lot to say. And I want to say good night. God bless you. Watch your back. Watch your neighbor's back. We're living in a crazy world right now. And remember, it was not your fault, and we too can heal, and we are people of worth. Okay. Good night, and God bless.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.
Love Talk Radio.